It's Monday morning. My name is Jeff Humfeld. Welcome to Jaws of Justice Radio on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. Today's show will be a call-in show with 22nd District Missouri State Representative Brandon Ellington. First, we will give Representative Ellington a chance to preview the 2015 legislative session. Then we will open the phone lines for your questions. Stay tuned for our calendar of events in the middle of the show and the 420 drug war news at the end of the show. I want to welcome everyone to Jaws of Justice Radio. Like I said, my name is Jeff Humfeld, and our guest this hour is 22nd District State Representative Brandon Ellington. Since he was first elected, Representative Ellington has made an impact in Jefferson City with his no-nonsense approach and willingness, or maybe a self-imposed requirement, to work with everyone, regardless of party or political caste. This has gained him the respect of representatives on both sides of the aisle, and obviously the members of the Black Caucus, who have elected him to be their chair. He has made the concerns of the people of his district on the east side of KC and western edge of Independence a priority, and articulated to others in the legislature why those concerns should matter to them as well. As a matter of disclosure, Brandon is my representative and my friend. However, that doesn't mean that I will let him off the hook on answering the questions posed to him today. To start today's conversation, we are going to look at what is expected in the 2015 session, and then we will open up the phone lines to your calls. So, welcome to Jaws of Justice, Brandon.
Thank you, Jeff.
The 2015 legislative session started about, 4 or 5 weeks ago. Have there been any big surprises so far?
Yes, immediately out of the gate. One of the immediate surprises I've seen is the legislation that the Republicans are actually getting behind to push this year, as opposed to focusing on issues that we've seen all summer, dealing with some of the police tactics, prosecutors, et cetera. We started off the session trying to cut people's unemployment benefits. We're trying to take those down to 13 weeks. We actually had that on the floor last week. We have three different right-to-work bills that have shot out of committee. But one of the biggest surprises is the restructuring of the House of Representatives. Now we have subcommittees to major committees. So we have regular standing committees that go up to select committees. They end up going up to rules before they hit the floor. So the structure of committees is completely different than how it's ever been in the Missouri House of Representatives. And I think it's a technique that was instituted for control, greater control over the bills.
So in other words, the Republicans are trying their best to control anything that walks through there, and probably an effort also to make it look like they just the opposite, that they're being fair and balanced, or however you want to say that. I understand that you have been put on a couple of committees here. Why don't you tell us about those committees and what those committees do?
Okay. Last week I was appointed vice chair of urban issues. I'm also on the Joint Committee for Corrections. I'm on Ways and Means. I'm the ranking member on Appropriations for Public Safety and Corrections. I'm on Small Business. I'm on Energy and Environment. And I'm on a Special Committee for Security Infrastructure of the Capitol Complex. It's an extremely long name of that long committee. Urban Issues is pretty much self-explanatory. It deals with urban areas, inner-city areas, St. Louis, Kansas City. We have a little bit of rural legislation that comes through there, but the majority of legislation deals with so-called urban areas. Various legislation that comes through that committee. Sometimes we have criminal justice bills. Sometimes we have economic development bills. Anything that's pretty much germane to our urban or so-called urban area, we're here in that committee. And again, I was appointed vice chair, which is an honor because only two Democrats have been made either chair or vice chair, and that's me and Courtney Curtis out of the 118 Republicans in the House. The Joint Committee on Corrections, that's a committee that deals with correction issues, but the Joint Committee means that it's a committee that's staffed with senators and representatives. We don't meet as often as a regular committee, but it's a heavy committee because you have a chance to bounce legislation back and forth with both chambers of the House. Ways and Means, it deals with taxation. So almost all taxation items, whether that's TIFs, whether that's development dollars, what have you, comes through Ways and Means. The appropriations for public safety and correction that deals with all appropriation and line items to all correctional facilities, probation and parole, the state highway division, anything that falls up underneath public safety. Small business falls in tandem with ways and means. We deal with incentives and different things that will help out small businesses. Energy and environment is a new committee that the Republicans created this year, and it pretty much deals with everything energy-wise. And we actually heard a Keystone Pipeline bill, even though we can't do anything about that in that committee, which is ridiculous to me. And the Special Committee on Security Infrastructure, a classified committee, I can't really talk about it, but it deals with securing the complex.
Okay. And securing the complex reminds me of that article I just saw about Wisconsin, I think, where the folks came to support their gun rights and wanted to go in, and they locked them out. I guess they were going to be carrying their guns into the House and the Senate. The state said, no, I don't think so. We don't want that. All right. The other thing that you've had happen for you is being elected chair of the Black Caucus. Why don't you tell us a little bit about, you know, what the Black Caucus is, what it does, and what you guys have planned?
Oh, yeah, we have a heavy agenda planned. What the Black Caucus is and what it should be is a vehicle for so-called minority inclusion, whether that's Black, Latino, women, et cetera. One of the things that we're focusing on is not only singular legislation, meaning the legislation of members of the caucus, but actually doing a greater job of engaging Kansas City and engaging St. Louis and even some of the rural areas out in the Boot Hills. What I found in prior sessions is that we have a large so-called minority population that's scattered throughout the state with very little representation or articulation of issues that negatively or overtly affect these communities. So we have some job fairs plant that's going to happen that we'll be rolling out this summer. We also have our annual town hall meetings that we'll be doing in the next couple of months. We totally restructured the way the caucus operates. So we have a greater emphasis on vetting legislation, meaning that we know what's coming up to the floor, and also crafting out different caveats in which we would believe would more effectively affect so-called minorities, regardless of party or districts that they live in. Yeah, so the Black Caucus this year should be highly active and more aggressive in engaging communities.
Talking about the job fairs and all, I'd like to ask you just a little bit about something else that you've got going on the side, so to say, which is your civic school, so to say, or you know, because they don't teach government and how government works and all in school anymore. And so you and I know there's other people that are doing something similar, have a kind of a school for folks to, you know, come in and find out what they should have learned in school.
Yeah, no, it's a conscious effort to keep people unengaged and uninformed. I was talking to a gentleman about 2 weeks ago, and he made a joke. He was like, Ellington, why don't you think we teach civics on public education television? And I was like, I don't know. He's like, because we don't want people to understand what's going on, because then we all be out of a job. So what we did was we created a community a few years back, one of the organizations I work with, which is Voices of the People. We have our free legal courses coming up. I'm just going to read off some dates. February the 10th will be the first one at the Mary Kelly Center, and that would be constitutional law. March 10th, April 14th, May 12th, and June 9th. And each one of these courses this year will either be taught by a judge or a lawyer from the Kansas City area, because last time I met with them, they wanted to get involved. And then we also have free political education classes, economic development classes, et cetera. But the whole thing is engaging the community and making sure the community is informed. Because the more informed people are, the less likely they are to be abused by institutions or people in those institutions that have perverse desires.
Just kind of like the old joke where the kid comes up to his dad and says, Dad, I want to go into organized crime. And he looks at him and says, the private sector or government? You know? We did have someone that called in just a few moments ago. We are not taking calls quite yet, but we will be taking calls here in another 5 minutes or so. You can call back at that time. A lot of what you've concerned yourself with since you've been in the legislature and even before you went to the legislature were the issues of the elderly, children, and also criminal justice issues. What are some of the bills and things that you're proposing and that to affect those particular issues?
This year I'm actually doing a good job of working with Republicans more. I've always worked with them, but working with them more than I have in the last couple of years. So I'm a co-sponsor on a lot of different bills that the Republicans have, but I'm still working on the minimum wage. I'm still working on overt corrections reform, because when we talk about corrections, it's a rehabilitation center, but we fail to make sure that our correction institutions are actually rehabilitating people. Then we release them and we wonder why we keep having this high crime rate. Also working on some different legislation that affect the 85% law, definitely employment access or accessibility laws. I have a couple elderly protection laws that I've been working on, such as when people are placed in nursing homes, sometimes the nursing homes can be become receivers of their money, but when you go to the nursing homes, it seems like they're getting treated worse than somebody that was in corrections. So that's a bill that I'll be having filed in the next week. Also, the video and audio equipment, and I did not file this in relation to what happened in Ferguson. I filed it last year, which is one of the things that irritates me the most about this bill, because I see people that have filed this bill this year that would not sign on to it, would not support it last year, and I fear that they're only supporting it this year because they want to get their name in the paper. Also have the grand jury bill, which I'll be getting a hearing on this Wednesday, which will be an interesting bill.
Now, not all states have grand juries, is that correct?
Well, more often than not, grand juries aren't used. They're not a requirement. They're a prosecutor procedure. The state of Missouri, people have become aware of the grand jury because of what happened in Ferguson and what McCullough did with it. But grand juries are not a necessity or a requirement to take somebody to trial. Grand juries are simple and plain a prosecutor's court.
Yes, that is true. Do you think lack of limits on campaign contributions in the state of Missouri, and it looks like at least one of the candidates for governor next year is already starting to position himself as being the champion of, what would you call it?
Campaign finance reform,
or trying to get rid of what he considers to be corruption. So do you think this is something that actually will have some legs in the legislature this year?
No. I think it would move maybe out of the House over to the Senate, then it'd die. There's very little appetite for campaign finance reform when you talk about people that would be cutting off their own pocketbooks that are getting large sums of donations. So Democrats, obviously, we're supportive of campaign finance reports. But when you look at the Republicans, they get $10,000, $20,000 checks. So I don't think that they're actually going to cap that. Even when we look at what happened this summer when it was coming after Attorney General Kushner, you heard them saying one thing, but if you check the finance reports, you'll see a whole other reality. So I don't think campaign finance reforms is going to move. I think it's a feel-good piece of legislation where it sounds like people want to get rid of the corruption or the money that's in politics. But if you're receiving that money, I think you have very little motivation to actually do that.
We're going to open up the phone lines here in just a few moments once we get our phone answerer into the room there. But, the other aspect of this, one of the reasons I asked was that there is a big habit of folks when they get termed out just stepping across the line and becoming a lobbyist. Is that, that's one of the things I think that really needs to be addressed.
Yeah, well, when you talk about the revolving door, I believe it was three legislators that termed out last year or that chose not to come back this year. One was actually elected and he dropped out that became lobbyist. Lobbying is like a double-edged sword. Lobbyists could be good things or they could be bad things. I often tell everybody that you yourself should be a lobbyist, meaning you should be engaging the your elected officials, whether that's at the state or the city, in conveying your issues, because that's what lobbying is. Some of the revolving doors, you have people that obviously understand the legislative process and they know people that are currently elected. And that's what makes the revolving door so significant, because you have somebody that left and they still got friends in the House that they can go talk to. But it depends on what they're lobbying for. One of the reasons I file a lot of bills dealing with elderly children, impoverished communities, because we have no lobbyists. So therefore, we get no legislation that's presented that benefits us, but large corporations are able to pay lobbyists, and they get all type of incentives and things that should be diverted towards people that need help. So the revolving door is actually something that we may see some headway on, but the overt campaign finance reforms, I doubt. The revolving door, though, we may actually pass something on that.
Okay, and I want to remind everyone we are going to take phone calls now, and that number is 816-931-5534. That's 816-931-5534, and I believe we have a caller on the line.
Good morning.
Welcome, caller. What part of town are you calling from, and what's your name?
My name is Esther Holzendorf, and I'm calling from Grandview, Missouri.
Okie dokie. And Esther, what's your question?
Well, first I want to thank you for your show. I really enjoy Jaws of Justice, and I want to let Representative Ellington know how much we appreciate all the work that he's doing. Once again, I want to congratulate him on his appointment as to the Urban Issues Committee and also the Black Caucus. So we know he's one of the hardest working young men or women in Jefferson City. We want him to know we appreciate that. But I have a quick question for him. Is it too late to get a bill filed in the House?
No. No, it's not. I actually got maybe 5 or 6 different pieces of legislation that should be coming out in the next week or so. It's not too late.
Okay. We have a coalition meeting at 12 noon today. If you get an opportunity to stop by, we sure would appreciate it. Know how busy you are, but it's going to be at Metropolitan Missionary Baptist Church with Reverend Horsfield, Wallace Horsfield Sr., and the coalition. So if you could stop by, we need to talk about getting a bill filed.
Yes.
If it's not too late.
No, yes, Ms. Esther.
Okay. And if you can't stop by the coalition, if you could email me or just give me a call, me or Minister Keith Brown, and we'll explain to you exactly what we're talking about, okay?
No problem.
We really appreciate you and appreciate Jeff for the show and KKFI. And y'all take care now and have a blessed day.
All right. Now, thank you, Ms. Esther.
You too.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
And this is the time that you call. And when you hear somebody hang up, that's the time to call. And that number is 816-931-5534. Brandon, we've talked a little bit about some of the legislation that you have up. Is there a particular bill that you really want to push?
Yeah, no, a couple of them. One would definitely be the video and audio equipment, because I think that's a no-brainer. I think it gives dual protections to police officers and citizens, protects citizens against abuse, or at least they have a recourse, and it protects police officers against felonious claims. One of the most important pieces of legislation to me would be the certification and binding of inmates that's in corrections. Last year, I got some momentum on the bill. The year before that, I got some momentum on the bill. This year, we got rid of slots, which should give me the ability to get it on the floor, because in previous years, you can only get 3 bills out of a committee with the thousands of bills that have been filed. But basically, what it does is if somebody's locked up in a correctional institution and they're working, they'd be certified in whatever job that they're doing once they hit the requirements of the state of Missouri. Or if it's a bondable position, that we'll work with a company upon release to make sure that inmate is bonded. I think this will severely reduce recidivism rate, would allow people to have the access to reassimilating to society, and I think it's a necessity when we talk about corrections, either warehousing or rehabilitating citizens. The minimum wage bill is something that I would like to get passed, too. Because we have a lot of Republicans that talk about we have to be pro-business. We have to bring more businesses in here. Well, I can't find anything that's more pro-business than paying people that work for companies a decent wage. That's pro-business to me.
If you had called in and were dropped, call back. We're having a little bit of trouble with our phone lines there, but we will persevere and get you on. And that number is 816-931-5534. All right, Brandon, there's some other things that you and I had talked about just a little bit beforehand, which are not really in the legislative session, but they're issues that are coming up. The first one is this recent report that in the year 2013, deaths by gun, which includes murder, accident, and suicide, surpassed deaths by car accidents in the state of Missouri. You know, in part, we've got to admit that the reason the deaths by car accident have gone down is because of required safety equipment and all the work that's been put into that. Is there a message here on what we should be doing with gun laws or regulations on how guns are made, or what do you think?
No, I think so. Now, I'm pro-Second Amendment. I believe in the right to carry concealed or open. But one of my issues that I'm having is watching the increase in murders and watching the increase in accidents and kids using guns to kill people because people are securely putting their firearms up. This is just a lack of concern and consciousness. You don't have a 2-year-old in the house or a 3-year-old in the house with easy access to a gun, and then that 2 or 3-year-old shoots their cousin, and then you come out talking about, I can't believe this, but you shouldn't have had the gun on the counter. Because a lot of the not the majority of them, but we've seen a lot of cases in the last 2 years of kids accidentally killing kids because the parents have left their guns out. We even had an incident of a parent in Walmart that had a gun in the purse that was shot by our own kid. And our gun laws here in Missouri, or our regulations here in Missouri, are so lax because of legislation that's came out of the House in the last few years that has consistently removed restrictions. And again, I support the Second Amendment, but I think we have a duty to be conscious and to be proactive when it comes to safety and exercising our constitutionally protected rights. And that's something that I have not seen. Laws right now would be kind of hard because the Republicans control the House, they control the Senate. Just to give you an example, last year we passed a bill that pretty much took all restrictions off everything. And it even crippled the city's ability to have ordinances or different things restricting people's right to carry, because now we made it a constitutional right. And we're even seeing court cases being challenged at the Supreme Court level now, dealing with people that have felonies to be able to carry their guns because of the new legislation that we passed here.
Okay, we've got a couple callers on the line. We're going to try and get them in, and then we will go to our calendar of events, and then we'll come back for more callers. First caller, you are on the air. What is your name, and what part of town are you calling from?
My name is Laura Bryant, and I'm calling from Kansas City, Missouri.
Welcome to Jaws of Justice Radio. You got a question for the representative?
Yes, Mr. Ellington, I want to thank you for all you do for the community, and we've met on several occasions. I am an educator, and my primary concern is education in the Kansas City School District. I talked to you at the Black Agenda meeting once, and I told you we're opening in the fall the first all-boys African-American school or charter school for all young men, not just African-American. We see there's such a need in our community for education at the elementary, primary level. What is being done at the state level or the city to improve the school districts? That's where it all begins, with education.
First, I'd like to say how you doing. I know exactly who you are. I remember meeting you. When you talk about the local investments, the only thing the local municipalities can do is improve the livability of the area. And that's a necessity, to do basic infrastructure, to make sure the neighborhoods are clean, make sure we have trash cans and lights, et cetera, because that would make an area ripe for investment and people to move in. Now, at the state level, it's going to be it hasn't started yet, but it will be a significant push this legislative session to expand charter schools and to expand school choice. Now, my only issue with school choice is the way they've been trying to do it in the last couple of years, is taking public funds and putting them in private institutions, which, in my opinion, and I believe this will realistically happen, it will privatize discrimination with public dollars. And that's something that I cannot support. But if we can create some type of legislation, and I've actually been talking to leadership in the House about this, creating legislation that y'all are not trying to take public dollars and put them into private institutions, then we can work on school choice and we can work on charter schools with a standard. Because currently in Missouri, we have a public school system that is standardized, and we have charter schools that are understandardized. So as long as we can standardize the educational attainment, meaning we know what happens in charter schools the same way we know what happens in public schools, and we can create that language that takes away the funding of public dollars to private schools with school choice, I believe this is something that would be beneficial to all communities, because then you will have the ability in whatever district or whatever community you're in is to craft and curtail the schools to that area's circumstances and specific needs. So when we talk about, like when I was in school, I was in the magnet program, right? So I studied Latin, I studied theology, et cetera, things that we don't have anymore. And I believe the more signature schools that we have, the better educational outcome we have, because we can actually put things that are germane to that community. But it will be a push this legislative session for education reform.
Okay, thank you very much for your call. We have another caller on the line. Caller, you're on the air. What is your name and what part of town are you calling from?
My name is Rich, and I'm calling from Johnson County, Kansas.
Okie dokie. What's your question, Rich?
Well, it's two parts. Number one, I see these payday lenders all over Kansas City. I see them in Johnson County, too, I might add. I hear their interest rates are ridiculous and horrible, and people get stuck in this debt thing. So, first of all, is there any possibility of that being limited and regulated? Number two, I hear so much about this ALEC group that is so present in everything. Have you seen that at all in your daily work as a legislature? And I'll hang up.
Okay, I'm going to start from the back end and work forward. ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, is very real. Yeah, it's a lot of legislation that is actually sponsored by ALEC. In not only Missouri, but in various states around here, you will see identical legislation going from state to state. ALEC has a lot of major corporations behind it, and ALEC is one of the reasons that we've had very, very, very little reform when it comes to economic incentives for working people, or the reason we have had a great increase in tax credits, tax breaks, and all type of things that I believe we should not be doing with taxpayer dollars for large corporations that makes billions of dollars. So ALEC is very real. And since I've been there, I've not only seen the legislation filed by legislators that I know come specifically from ALEC. I got in a debate with a gentleman before in committee. And he swore to me that ALEC was a fictitious organization, and then less than 2 minutes later, in the same debate that we was having, he admitted that the bill was sponsored by ALEC, and that's the reason why he filed the bill. And it was just kind of mind-blowing to me that he forgot that he had just said it was fictitious, and I made it up. And then he admitted to filing the bill because I pulled up some things that I knew was on his reports. So ALEC is extremely real. Now, the payday lending, I'm 100% against the interest rates. I'm 100% against what they do. There's a lot of Democrats that are against what they do. I believe there'll be no reform on them this year because, again, we're going back to that double-edged sword of lobbying and who benefits from what. And they charge outrageous interest rates. They victimize poor communities. They victimize some middle-income communities, and they're still allowed to persist. And my fear is that we won't have any movement on them this year. And, again, that goes back to the imbalance in the body.
Okay, we're going to break here for a moment and have some public service announcements and our calendar of events, and then we'll be back and take more of your phone calls.
And now, the calendar for the week of February 9th, 2015. The Greater Kansas City Reentry Team quarterly meeting is going to be held on Thursday, February 19th, from 9 a.m. till 11 a.m. at the MCC Pioneer Campus Auditorium, and that is located at 2700 East 18th Street, Kansas City, Missouri. This meeting will include a reentry simulation exercise facilitated by Corey Thiessen and reentry coordinator there for affairs at the U.S. Penitentiary in Leavenworth, Kansas. You can experience the hidden obstacles and barriers of reentry. The Center for Conflict Resolution is holding an open house on Thursday, February 12th, and that will be from 3 until 6 p.m. at their new location, 1734 East 63rd Street, Suite 305 in Kansas City, Missouri. For more information, you can check them out at the web at www.ccrkc.org. Or you can call them at 816-461-8255. And the mothers of incarcerated sons and daughters will have their monthly meeting on Saturday, February 14th. It will be from noon until 2 p.m. at the Waldo Branch Library, which is located at 201 East 75th Street, Kansas City, Missouri. If you have a loved one that is incarcerated and needs advice or support, MISD has members that might be able to help. The KCMO NAACP Annual Black History Program is going to be held at the Bruce R. Watkins Cultural Heritage Center, located at 3700 Blue Parkway in Kansas City, Missouri. That will be on Sunday, February 15th at 3 p.m. And this year's theme is A Century of Black Life, History, and Culture. Presentations will be made on the three areas of the theme, and there will also be skits, spoken word, and musical selections from our youth. You are invited to bring your friends and family, youth, and seniors alike. My name is Beth Pike, and reminding you that these events and more can be found on Jaws of Justice Radio's Facebook page, as well as Jaws of Justice Radio page on the KKFI website at kkfi.org.
And we are back. This is Jeff Humfeld, and with me is State Representative Brandon Ellington. We also want to remind everyone that the phones are open, and that number is 816-931-5534. Brandon, last session, the Senate was shut down by a group of ministers on moral grounds, demanding action on a long list of items they felt were a matter of human rights. Already this session has been interrupted by demonstrators about the issues raised by what happened in Ferguson. Is this coercion by a few or the voice of the people? And what action should the legislature take to address this issue?
All right, now this is where I get in trouble, because a lot of my colleagues believe that we should have the quorum and the House to be ran a certain way and the Capitol should be treated a certain way. I, on the other side of that coin, believe the Capitol is the people's house. I believe the people's voice should be heard in the Capitols, in the hallways, in the chambers, in the Senate, and in the House of Representatives. I believe that if we see more protests, if we see more people come into the Capitol voicing their concern or voicing their anger at the lack of action, I believe we would get quick action. It kind of goes back to what the caller was asking about Alex. Alex is real because Alex is there, and there are a whole bunch of companies that have benefits that they want, and they send lobbyists up there. Well, when we talk about basic reforms or common sense reforms or things that we should be doing for the citizens, we get little movement on it because we have no agitation from the citizenry. Maybe certain members in a district gets emails and phone calls, but the overt body sees nothing. So I think it should be more protests. I think it should be more people up there holding signs. I think it should be more people up there stopping business as usual until the people's work gets done. So I'm 100% supportive of what I've seen so far. My only negative issue is that it hasn't been enough. And when we look at the legislative session this year, obviously they're not paying attention. I mean, they pay attention when people come up there, but obviously they're not paying attention because in the House, what we've been doing these last couple of weeks is, again, trying to cut people's unemployment benefits down to 13 weeks. And unemployment is for people that work, not people that don't work. We've been pushing right-to-work bills to break up unions, et cetera, which has nothing to do with the benefits of people. And we also have been pushing tax cuts, not for people, but for corporations, which benefits nobody that's not a CEO.
We have a caller on the line. Caller, you are on the air. What is your name, and what part of town are you calling from?
My name is Jeff, and I'm calling from downtown.
Well, what is your question, Jeff?
Well, I had two things I wanted to advocate for. First of all is I think we absolutely have to have special prosecutors in certain cases because the regular prosecutors have to work too closely with the police, and so it's hard for them to remove themselves from that relationship and make certain that the public is receiving the justice that they deserve to get. And the second thing I wanted to advocate for was more transit money. We really absolutely have to have more transit money from the state here locally in order to increase the level of our bus service. And also I want to see us continue to support our Amtrak service across from St. Louis to Kansas City. I'll hang up and get your reaction off the radio. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Brandon. I'm sure you've got some answers for those.
Yeah, and I'm 100% supportive of regional transportation. At the state, one of our hesitations, and particularly looking at Kansas City, not even St. Louis, is a diversion of dollars that we send down for the buses that the city has actually been diverting. That's an issue that both Democrats and Republicans have. Nobody at the state legislature has anything against public transportation, but we don't like when we see cities take public dollars for transportation and they use them for pet projects. That's a distaste in many of the Republicans' mouths, and it's a distaste in my mouth because we cut services, and I shouldn't say we, the city cuts services towards people that need those services. Again, for pet projects, is not going to benefit as many people as we would benefit with an increase in the public transit funding. Public transit, and we're not planning on cutting any funding for public transportation. But until we start seeing the cities utilize that money appropriately, it will not be an increase because, again, it's a great distaste for what we see that happens on the local level. The special prosecutors. I'm a co-sponsor on the special prosecutor bills. I believe in a special prosecutor. The only problem that we have with that bill currently is the pool where the special prosecutors is going to come from. Because in St. Louis has 95, 96 municipalities. So theoretically, you could pull a special prosecutor from like 1.2.5 miles away, and it would qualify, which is still in that same pool of prosecutors working with police. So we're working on trying to clarify and clean that language up. It's a lot of appetite for a special prosecutor in the House, at least in the House. I don't know about the Senate. In the House, there's a lot of appetite for it, but we have to clean that language up.
Okay, we do have another caller on the air, line. Caller, you are on the air. What is your name and what part of town are you calling from?
It's a blind guy from the Villa Incognito in Midtown. How are you, Mr. Ellington?
I'm doing good. How are you doing today?
Fabulous. Listen, I got good reports when you and I and Officer Friendly Major Anthony Ells was on Urban Connections. We're going to have to repeat that. In Kansas City and Jackson County, we're trying to make a move to where we'll ban the felon box. But yes, in the city, it was kind of banned maybe, but it was replaced with, like, have you been convicted of a crime, arrested for a crime? And I'd like to see a clean application, because once a person gets in and talks to somebody, they could probably convince them that they aren't that bad, and we could get more people employed. And we're working on the liquor control law so that they can work in more restaurants and even serve. I'd like to talk about gun safety, but more important, because it affects community of color and poor people and that stuff. Because you don't see them breaking down doors in Mission Hills and Hallbrook with this, and yet they have just as many drugs there. But what about a different bill on cannabis, both agriculture and legalization? And while we're on that subject, you know, the drug war has been an effing failure for over 100 years and cost a lot of treasury and hurt a lot of families.
No, I agree with you. The ban the box, I sponsored that bill. I sponsored it last year. This year, the issue, there's no issue with that bill. The only negative to that is it removes it from the application process. But if a company still wants to do a background check, they have every right of doing a background
check.
Absolutely.
You don't want an embezzler in your accounting department.
But they
and the reason why I really want to ban the boxes, I'm being fair. I want my fellow conservative Republicans to be able to get a job. I mean, most of them don't get convicted, but a few do.
No, it's no problem with the banded box. Last year, we only had slots, though, so that's lessened what you can get on the floor, because you can only get three bills out of a committee. Most of the Republicans I talked to, they have no issue with the bill. The legalization of marijuana, I filed that bill. I will be filing the medical one, too, because it will be easier to get the medical one passed than the overt legalization. Many of the Republicans that I talked to last year, they was hesitant for either one of them. This year, it's actually like two Republicans that have filed the medical. And again, I've already filed the HJR for the legalization, which if I get it out, it will bring it to a vote of the people. The sentiment is actually turning in the state, and it's not turning because of the municipal values. It's turning because they're looking at how much money they can bring in, which goes into what you were talking about in the war on drugs. Because if we're going to use one opinion over here that it makes money and is good for the state, then you can't be a hypocrite. And we have to start looking at our criminal justice issues and our criminal justice reforms in the time frames that we've been giving people for the same things that now the state is saying we can make money for, which is the same ideology that poor folks have been saying in poor communities.
Yeah, one of the issues here that it gets lost in all of this also is the hemp production.
Yes.
And
yes,
the economic development behind that. Missouri was one of the largest growers of hemp for products before all of this stuff started happening. So we're in good standing to make some real headway with this if they would allow that.
Well, I think the hemp is going to pass too. I can't remember what senator has it right now. Off the top of my head, I want to say Hosen, but I'm not 100% sure about that. But I know it's a hemp bill that has been passed. The hemp bill shouldn't have any problems. It's similar to the oil that we had last year. And the medical, surprisingly, has a good chance of moving through the legislative body. And then we have the initiatives that will be coming up in 2016 as long as they get enough signatures.
We might as well move ahead. It's nice to have it as a bill and get it on a signature. But let's not make things difficult. Let's just cut to the chase. But, hey, peace out.
Thank you very much. The other issue that he brought up was the special prosecutors. And I want to kind of piggyback on that, because something that you and I had talked briefly about beforehand, which is that there's a judge out in San Francisco, Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals that has indicated that the judiciary should stop prosecutors from lying and soliciting others to lie in court, and that maybe they should be looking at charging them with perjury when they do this. Are there laws or regulations that the legislature could pass, perhaps? You know, how can we go after prosecutors who are lying in court and getting away with it, where they can offer things to people in prison or whatever for testimony, where if a defense attorney did something like that, they'd go to jail right away?
Yeah. Now, the latter part, what you're talking about is the coercion or persuading inmates to testify against other inmates or to testify in favor for different things is extremely questionable. There's been many cases that has came back that inmates, like it was a murder, not here in Missouri, but it was a murder that they actually had a documentary on, and the dude came back. He was like, yeah, I said he did it, but I said he did it because the prosecutor came to me in the jail saying, said I'd get such and such amount of time off. He was like, honestly, I don't know if dude did it or not because I wasn't even there. But he had testified that he was there, that he seen the blood trail, the whole nine, and then he came back and he was feeling guilty. He said, I feel extremely guilty because I know dude probably didn't do it. And again, my testimony was all the way made up. Now, as far as the proceedings in petit juries or trial by juries, it is a recourse if a prosecutor is in there and a prosecutor is lying or a prosecutor is making up evidence. This is where the defense attorney comes from, and also the judge can strike that attorney. And there's also certain things that can happen to him by being disbarred, et cetera. Now, in the grand jury, though, is no recourse or no negative infractions that can happen if a prosecutor gets up there and they said Jeff did X, Y, and Z, or if they bring in witnesses to testify against you that they know wasn't there. In Missouri, we just recently seen that with McCullough. McCullough came out and admitted that he allowed testimony that he knew was fraudulent to go before the grand jury process. He allowed witnesses that he knew was not there to testify about what they seen when they wasn't there, and he admitted all of this. But there's no recourse in the grand jury proceeding because, again, a grand jury is a prosecutor's court. Prosecutor can come in there and say whatever he wants to say. Even in Missouri, what we had was we had misallocation of laws that we know was no longer on the books. The prosecutor stated this to get the grand jury to believe one thing, and that was one of the reasons behind the grand jury bill is because we have to have reform in the grand jury system. So if it's a petit trial or a trial by jury, it is recourse that can happen to a prosecutor. The other end that you was talking about, prosecutors persuading people, is no recourse right now. And we could work for some reforms, but it would be kind of hard to pin that down because the prosecutor is the one that prosecutes, and they can prosecute you at whatever time frame they choose to put in front of a judge.
We are starting to get down to the last few minutes of the show, so if you do have a question that you want to ask, now is the time to call. That number is 816-931-5534. 816-931-5534. Call in with your questions. We're getting down to the end, so now's the time to call. One other thing that you and I had talked about that's along this same line, and that's this: Jermaine Dollard was sentenced in Delaware to 20 years in prison in 2013 for possession and conspiracy to distribute cocaine. He's been in jail for almost 2 years now, and they all of a sudden decided they should test this stuff that he had in his car, and they found out it wasn't illegal drugs. It wasn't any illegal drug at all, and he was exonerated. With that exoneration, all 50 states have exonerated at least one person. Do you think that we should have a false conviction review system in Missouri, some way to look at these cases? I know that you know, some prosecutors' offices have these in there, but there's no standardization and there's no real, you know, umph behind a lot of them.
Now, I'm actually glad you said that, because I had conversations with our prosecutor here in Kansas City, James Peter Baker and Caleb in their office. They actually will review cases, but like you said, there's no standardizing. And I think they only can review cases once somebody has sent something to them. So it's not like an active researching board. I agree with you 100%. We should have some type of standardization, because when we talk about the criminal justice system. If you haven't been through it, if you don't know people that have been through it, you think everybody that goes through it is bad, right? They had to do the crime or they would not be getting prosecuted. But once you start breaking down the empirical data, you see that we have a lot of people that have false convictions. We see some people that get convicted because either the prosecutor has an issue with them, maybe the judge had a previous issue with them, et cetera, and they're convicted for crimes that they may not have necessarily done this time. Which is scary when you look at how many people are exonerated, how many people are released after serving 10, 15, 20 years. And, oh, it was a mistake. Even some clerical errors can lead to long-term imprisonment. So we have to have an active review board and a mechanism that's researching cases. A couple of people that's locked up now that I'm trying to help out that I believe would never get out, not because he's not innocent, but because this case is political. And even the witnesses in this case have came back and recanted their testimony and said this individual was not part of the crime. One individual that's locked up stated that him himself, the one that was locked up, did the crime, and the other gentleman that's locked up had nothing to do with it. But, again, his crime is political, so I doubt he would get out.
That's so true. We're down to the last minute or so here, Brandon. Why don't you tell people how they can find out about the bills that you have sponsored or just any of the bills that are in the legislature. I believe the website there.
The website is www.house.mo.gov. If you know the bill number, you can put the bill number in the search engine and all bills will pop up. If not, you can go to the directory of our representatives. You can click on any representative in the House and you click, once you click on their name, you go to their page and you see a list for bills. You click on that, you'll get to see every piece of legislation this individual has sponsored or is involved in. And you can also track the bills and you can listen to us live on Florida base by going to the House website and just clicking on the play button, which I suggest people should do. You'd be surprised what comes out of people's mouths.
Well, I have to say I'm sorry to the caller that's called in here right at the end. We've run out of time. We will do this show again sometime down the road here. Yes. With Brandon. Have him come in, and we'll talk some more about what did happen in the legislature, and hopefully he'll have some good news for us. Brandon Ellington, we want to thank you very much. This is Jeff Humfeld. You have been listening to Jaws of Justice Radio here on KKFI, and now we will go to the 420 Drug War News.
It's the 420 Drug War News. The following segment, courtesy KCEN-TV.
It's been a nightmare.
His daughter has intractable epilepsy. And Christy Zartler?
We've been desperate for 5 years.
Her daughter has severe autism and cerebral palsy. And Barbara Humphreys?
Difficult, very devastating.
She has breast cancer. So what do each of these people have in common? They're all fighting to secure their right to medical marijuana in the state of Texas.
I'd like to see it legalized everywhere. I think that many people could benefit from this, not just for epilepsy, but for cancer patients, for people with Crohn's disease, I mean, people with PTSD.
Dashner's daughter, Felicity, has suffered with severe epileptic seizures for most of her life.
She has grand mal seizures. She has petite mal seizures. She has tonic-clonic seizures. I mean, you name it, she has it. Now, we don't see barely any of that.
What's changed? Well, Felicity is now being treated for her seizures using whole plant cannabis oil, but it took her and Dashner relocating to Colorado to access it.
It's pretty much been a godsend, y'all moving there.
It's been a miracle.
Felicity has gone from having 40 to 100 seizures a day to maybe 3 a week. She is also now able to speak in full sentences and walk without falling.
Tara?
Others, like Zartler's daughter, have not been so lucky.
She doesn't speak, and she's still incontinent or wearing diapers.
Like Felicity, Zartler's daughter, Kara, has suffered with debilitating conditions for most of her life.
She's been on many medicines. I would say most of them were ineffective. And then the ones that have been effective, her body builds up immunity to them.
For the sake of Kara's health and their sanity, Zartler and her husband are already planning their move to Colorado. But it's the thought of leaving so many friends and family members behind that have them praying for a legislative miracle.
I'm hoping that our lawmakers can learn the positive benefits of what this would provide all of our children who have these conditions.
And so does Barbara Humphreys, not only for children, but for grown adults like herself.
I started reading about cannabis right away because it was suggested to me by more than one person, several of my friends, some of my family members.
Humphreys has been battling breast cancer for the past 9 months, and although she does live in Texas, she's not letting that stop her from treating her chemotherapy side effects with medicinal marijuana.
With zero actual deaths from reported use, isn't it time to give medical marijuana a try? Dean Becker, DrugTruth.net.
Ready? One, two, three.
You enjoy today's show and that we leave you with something to think about, something to talk to your neighbors about, and a reason to get involved. As always, the opinions expressed are those of the host and guest of Jaws of Justice Radio, not of KKFI, the Midcoast Radio Project Incorporated, its staff or volunteers. You can find our calendar of events and a link to our show episodes and podcasts on the Jaws of Justice Radio Facebook page. If you have a show idea or want to help produce Jaws of Justice Radio, email us at jawsofjusticeradio@yahoo.com. And you can always listen to us live and find podcasts of our show on the KKFI website, that is kkfi.org. We thank our engineer, Beth Pipe, for her work today. My name is Melvin Merritt, asking you to tune in for the rest of our 9 a.m. weekday lineup with Law and Disorder on Tuesday, Alternative Radio on Wednesday, Tell Somebody with Tom Claymer on Thursday, and Between the Lines at 9 a.m., followed by Bioneers at 9:30 a.m. on Fridays. Up next is Beautician Blues with Luscious Lynn, and at noon, Arts Magazine with Michael Ho. Stick around for jazz and blues in the afternoon and Eco Radio KC at 6 p.m. Then round out your day with the spicy Latin sounds of Sabora Latino and Fiesta Musicale. Okay.